Good morning, RPN listeners. Welcome to the program. I'm your host, Nadia Abdeen. My guest today is author Mike Scruggs, author of the book, The Uncivil War, Truths Your Teacher Never Taught You. Mike was a career military intelligence officer and now is an astute historian and writer. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Nadia.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Well, I'm glad to be on it. Hope you don't have as much snow as we have.
Did you get much over there?
We got about 6 to 8 inches.
Oh, wow. You got more than I did. Well, isn't it wonderful technology facilitates we can get together and we don't have to leave our home?
Yes, that is particularly wonderful this morning.
Yeah. You know, I love the title, The Uncivil War. Tell us how you came about the title.
Well, one of the myths of the war between the states, as it's commonly called, I prefer to call it the war for Southern independence, but is that it was a civil war, and the southern states that seceded had no intention of trying to overthrow the U.S. government in Washington. They only wanted to secede from it. So technically it's not a civil war. Lincoln tried to sort of push the idea that it was a civil war, that it was only a few recalcitrants in the South that were stirring up trouble and trying to create a revolution to overthrow the U.S. government. But actually, the Southern states seceded in a very constitutional and orderly manner through state conventions and votes and legislators. It was all very orderly, and it was secession according to the Constitution rather than a civil war. It was far from a civil war. So when we talk about the Civil War, we're sort of perpetrating a myth that was devised to make the war look like something other than it really was.
When, you know, there were a lot of things that were happening before that, before the, quote, Civil War actually erupted, wasn't there? There were sort of a call for Civil War a decade or so before any of the first shots were fired. Is that correct?
Well, there had been an ongoing conflict between North and South, probably going back and to at least just after the War of 1812, and that conflict was really bracketed mostly by the fact that the North had ambitions to become a great manufacturing power, whereas the South was actually a great agricultural power.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a conflict there of which would dominate. Unfortunately, as the North became a majority in Congress, and that was because of further immigration, which the South wasn't getting much of, they, rather than operate in a reasonable democracy where you recognize the rights of regional minorities or political minorities, they tried to completely dominate and get their will, and one of the worst things that they did was the Morrill Tariff in 1860. But there's a background leading up to that. The so-called Tariffs of Abomination. But the Morrill Tariff, I think, is there had not been a Morrill Tariff in 1860, there may never have been a war.
Wow, well, we'll get right back to that. We're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned to the Republic Broadcasting Network.
The Berkey Light's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkey Light, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkey Light is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkey Light, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
It's not a matter of if, but when. If it happens, you want to be ready to give your loved ones a fighting chance. Do not rely on someone else to come through for you at a time when it could be about life and death. Your best chance is Safe Castle Royal, the premier crisis preparedness buyers club out there. Members get everything at rock-bottom pricing, with at least 20% off everything in our store all the time, and free shipping to the lower 48. Emergency storage food, prefab shelters and safe rooms, and hundreds of other essential products will get you through the toughest of times. Right now, you can join the club for only $10, a one-time lifetime fee that gets you some of the best prices anywhere on preparedness products. Please use the coupon code CLUBRADIO when joining to receive your special membership price. Do it now. Go to SafeCastleRoyal.com. That's SafeCastleRoyal.com. Sign up and use the Club Radio coupon code or call 1-877-673-2394 and be on your way to peace of mind that comes with being prepared.
Are you new to freeze-drying foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. Space Program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. Submarine Service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
And back, talking with author and historian Mike Scruggs. And Mike was writing a series of articles for the Tribune Papers, the Asheville Tribune in Asheville and Hendersonville, North Carolina. And I wanted to read just a little excerpt from your publisher, David Morgan. And he was speaking about your writing, saying, "The more he wrote, the more the bubble of bias was being punctured. The culture of denial was being blistered by facts and historical truths that were unraveling the warped tapestry that was the bias for their existence." And, you know, Mike, I wanted to, before we get back and speak about the moral tariff, I wanted to talk about just history itself and why sometimes it gets mangled and twisted and why our children are taught the wrong perspective.
Well, whenever you have a great war, particularly if that war is not really about the high moral purposes that it was supposed to be, or at least broadcast to be after the war or during the war as propaganda, the victor, whether they are, whoever they are, and this is true of particularly great empires, has to create a myth that what was done, the aggression that was done, the war that was done, was for some great moral purpose. And if you look into it, very much of it was not for a great moral purpose. It was just greed and a desire for unlimited power, a desire.
Well, that sounds that resonates. It sounds very contemporary. What you're talking about as well for what we're involved in America today.
Well, that kind of thing is always contemporary. If you want to make importing millions of low-cost illegal immigrants, if you want to give it some justification, you have to create some myth around it. And that's happening today, but it happens very frequently with any wars that are fought. It's not that all wars are immoral, but there is frequently, at least on one side, takes two to make a war, just naked aggression on the part of one, but they always create some myth to make it look like it was a great moral struggle.
Well, and you know, growing up, they taught us that slavery and the effort to free the slaves was the cause of the war. Are you saying that's not the case?
Well, slavery was an issue, but it really wasn't the issue that really precipitated the war. It was an underlying tension, but it wasn't an issue like most people think of it an issue. It's portrayed as the high moral cause of eliminating slavery, and that is absolutely not true. And even Lincoln would have been surprised at some of the things written about that now, because he himself at least said it was to preserve the Union. Now, we could go into exactly what do you mean by preserving a Union. If you have to preserve it with bayonets, it's not a real constitutional democratic Union. But mm-hmm. The slavery thing has been used excessively and has some modern political agendas too, but actually Woodrow Wilson had a good quote that I found. I think I put this in the book, and here's what he said about it. It was necessary to put the South at a moral disadvantage by transforming the contest from a war waged against states fighting for their independence into a war waged against states fighting for the maintenance and extension of slavery. So Woodrow Wilson knew the myth, but unfortunately not as many people know that today, because it's sort of, the myth is sort of incorporated into textbooks in public schools. Even Christian schools pick it up without really realizing that it's propaganda, not truth.
Well, why was it so popular to portray the war as strictly over slavery?
Well, no one really likes slavery. And even Robert E. Lee said, you know, it was a moral evil. Every state in the Union, when our Constitution was founded, or at least the Declaration of Independence, had slavery. And the ones with the fewest slaves began to get rid of it sort of step by step, and they all did it in their own timing. And one of the issues is the South said, well, we have slavery. Actually, only about 25% of Southern families own slaves, so you can see why it might not have been that popular. And most people in the North and the South thought, we need to phase this out, but we need to phase it out without destroying the South economically.
Mm-hmm.
But there were people who weren't willing to listen to that. They actually weren't a majority in the North. They were a small minority, but they became to have a bigger and bigger voice. It's the radical abolitionists. And their talk and the favor that many organs of the Northern press gave them, and many politicians really frightened the South as to that the North could sympathize with these people. But it was an issue, but it wasn't an issue like it most people think. As a matter of fact, most Northern states would not let blacks vote. Many states, including Illinois, Illinois did not even want blacks in their state. And Abraham Lincoln actually approved of that law. I think it was passed about 1848, but don't hold me to that. But Oregon didn't want them in their states, and the issue there was they didn't want black labor, especially slave labor, competing with white labor in those states.
Well, it was an integral part of the economy, and there were some people who did free their slaves. Dolly Madison's father, you know, she was a Quaker. He liberated all of his slaves and very soon thereafter went completely bankrupt. It ruined him financially.
Well, it was something that the South had become dependent upon. And,
yes.
In the 1750s, actually, there weren't nearly as many slaves, and South Carolina and Virginia actually protested to the British Crown that they didn't want more slaves. But the British Crown decided it was just too profitable to refuse.
Mm-hmm.
So they kept coming, and the South grew. Probably the South wasn't dependent on slave labor until about the 1830s. Or probably a little bit before that. But anyway, they became sort of dependent on it. Only about 25% of Southern families owned slaves, only about 20% of Confederate soldiers owned slaves, and probably only about a third of those came from slave-owning families. So it was an issue, but how to handle it and the timing of it was what it was about. And the South just wanted to handle that in their own time. And there are many. Robert E. Lee released his slaves early in the war. Confederate General Johnston owned no slaves. A good many of them did. Their idea, and actually Lincoln's idea, was that they should be emancipated sort of slowly or phased out where it wouldn't be too great a burden. But the difference between what Lincoln wanted and most Southerners had gotten familiar with the slaves, and they had really good relations with them. Lincoln's idea was to deport them. A lot of people don't know that. So that's something that shocks many people, but the South would have been willing to...
Well, there was actually a movement among Madison to repatriate them back. I think it would have been Liberia. Someone correct me, but
yes,
yeah,
that,
there
that
was a
that was part of that repatriation or deportation.
Yeah. Well, Mike, we have a caller, George from Florida. George, good morning. George,
hey,
are you with us?
Yeah. Good morning. I ask a question.
Good morning.
Where South Carolina, I think, was the first Southern state to secede from the Union, because actually there's another state that seceded. And that was the state of Wisconsin, but they like to demonize the South. The South Carolina, wasn't that the state that had the most free blacks than any other state?
They probably did. They had, of course, they had many slaves, and I don't recall the number, but I think there were several thousand free blacks in Charleston alone. And I might add here that one reason that... Lincoln felt compelled to put down secession is that besides the southern states, there were other states that were talking about secession, and one of them, not a state, but New York City, because the South was going to be a free trade sort of nation where the North was a high tariff philosophy. And if the South was going to be free trade and the North high tariff, a lot of people in New York City thought that, you know, for our own economic good, we better be on the side of free trade, not to join the South, but to secede. I believe there was a secession movement in California and Oregon, too. So I think Lincoln probably felt that if he did not forcibly put down this trend towards secession, that that California or Oregon might leave, or Wisconsin or New York City.
Well, we're going to go to another break, and we'll be right back with Mike Scruggs. Stay with us.
Attention, this is an RBN Financial News Bulletin. Have you ever wanted to get out of debt, maybe even make some of your debts disappear completely? If so, and you're an RBN listener, there is a very real chance you will be able to do it. Here is why. A new manual has just been published that reveals how you can get out of debt in 90 minutes without any loans or bankruptcy whatsoever. The insider secrets revealed allow you to get out of debt so fast and so completely that it makes some people feel like they're stealing, but they're not stealing. The secrets taught in the manual are 100% legal and 100% ethical. It's just that bankers, debt collectors, and credit card companies don't want you to know about these loopholes. Don't be a prisoner of debt. Go to outin90.com. That's www.outin90.com or call 877-327-0365. RBN listeners receive a free DVD with purchase.
The Berkeylight's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkeylight, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkeylight is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkeylight, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
Are you concerned about cholesterol, blood pressure? Are you experiencing chest pain? Are you looking for a more natural method to help improve your health issues?
I had two mild heart attacks, and I had an 80 to 90% blockage in my artery. Don recommended I take this Cardivite. I haven't had any chest pain since I've been on it. It's brought my cholesterol down. My blood sugar was really fluctuating from 10 to 14 when I went on the Cardivite. You know, it really leveled it out. I'm really pleased. And I feel so good about it. I'll tell you, it's great for your circulation because I've noticed that I've had problems with my feet because of the diabetes, and they're getting better. They don't hurt as much. It's really great. I recommend this to anybody.
To learn more, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our website at heartdrop.com. That's heartdrop.com. Call 1-877-928-8822.
We're back and talking with Mike Scruggs about his book, The Uncivil War. First, I wanted to share a few thoughts with you from one of our sponsors. RBN has a new sponsor, Freeze Dry Guy. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze Dry Guy, freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. There has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy of long-storing foods and preparedness supplies. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663. Freeze Dry Guy pays the freight within the lower 48 states. Visit RBN's new sponsor today. All right, Mike, we're back. And, you know, before we went to the break earlier, you were talking about the Morrill tariff. And that's
the Morrill tariff. M-O-R-R-I-L-L. It's named for a congressman for Vermont that introduced it, a Republican congressman. Before I think that's important to go over, but before I do that, I wanted to saw through it. For instance, Charles Dickens, the author, said this in an article about it. He said, "The Northern onslaught upon slavery is no more than a piece of specious humbug, disguised to conceal its desire for economic control of the United States." That pretty much puts it in a nutshell. Karl Marx was also a correspondent in Europe at the time, and he favored the North. And he complained that the British newspapers, the Times, the Economist, and Saturday Review were saying things like this. He quotes, "The war between the North and South is a tariff war. The war is further not for any principle, does not touch on the question of slavery, and in fact turns on the Northern lust for power." And after the war, several years after the war, 5 years after the war, a Northern abolitionist lawyer, Lysander Spooner, put it this way. I said, "All these cries of having abolished slavery, of having saved the country, of having preserved the Union, of establishing a government of consent, and of maintaining the national honor are all gross, shameless, transparent cheats, so transparent that they ought to deceive no one." Unfortunately, they're deceiving most people today. But I would like to talk about the moral tariff. And if you'd like to forgive me, it takes a little bit of background, but I'll go through it as quickly as possible. Is that okay?
Yeah, I'd like for you to do that, but the caller that we had before we went to the break, George, has, I believe, another question for you, Mike. George, okay. Are you there?
Well, I think the moral tariff, I was about to ask that, so I'm going to get off the phone and let him talk about it.
All right, great. Thank you for calling.
Thank you, George. Well, we're ready to talk about the moral tariff.
Yeah.
In 1860, there was no income tax. About 95% of the federal revenue came from tariffs on imported goods, and that's the way it had been, really, almost since the founding. And but tariffs have they're revenue raisers, but they have some big disadvantages if not done right. Domestic customers will pay more, and that gives an advantage to the U.S. manufacturer. And there are regional differences. Some and this happened to be a big issue because tariffs hurt exporters, and particularly agricultural exports, and they make those exports less competitive. So a tariff was an instrument that was weighted to help Northern manufacturing, but it hurt the South. But until about 1824, it was only about 15%, so it wasn't a terrible issue. But around 1824, Henry Clay, who was a great on the tariff, was able to get through some legislation that raised the tariff considerably from about 15 to 20% to close to 35%. And that was devastating to the South and greatly resisted by the South. And as a matter of fact, when they raised the 1824 tariff from 18 to 35%, South Carolina exports dropped 25% in about 2 years. And of course, everybody in South Carolina was having to pay higher prices to either buy the northern goods or to pay the tariff. And to add insult to insult, in 1828, they raised the tariff against over considerable southern objection. The South was just outraged. They raised it to almost 50%. And that was the first of the tariffs of abomination. And in 1832, they only modified it slightly, despite Southern distress.
Well, let's hold that thought. We'll get right back to it. We've got another break. We'll be right back with Mike Scruggs.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
The Berkeleyte's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkeleyte, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkeleyte is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkeleyte, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
Are you new to freeze-drying foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, for nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places." People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs. It discusses America and Prophecy, the Antichrist, Tyrants and Wars, Secret Societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715. Or mail P.O. Box 771, Athens, Tennessee, 37371.
We're back discussing the Civil War and the mythology that we've been living with for so many decades about it. And Mike, you were discussing the Morrill Tariff, and I'd like to finish up with that and go on to a couple of other questions I have for you.
Okay. Well, the tariffs of 1828 and 1832, called the Tariffs of Abomination, which were the tariffs were raised from about 15% to 50%, was devastating the South, and it caused a constitutional crisis called the Nullification Crisis, because the South Carolina legislature declared it was unconstitutional and they weren't going to pay it. And John C. Calhoun pointed out that it was unconstitutional. I can't remember the chapter and verse of the Constitution, but it's not constitutional to pass such disproportionate taxes and benefits. Calhoun forced them to compromise, and the tariff went back to about 15%. In 1857, there was a recession, and so the North started talking about tariffs again. But the South was already paying about 87% of taxes, and 80% of the revenues were spent on Northern projects and railroad subsidies. So May 1860, the U.S. House passed the Morrill Tariff, after Justin Morrill. It raised the tariff from 15% to 37%, then it was going to increase to 47% in 3 years, and it tripled.
Wow, that's significant, yeah.
Tripled the items covered too, so it was really more significant to that. So it just, you would think they had learned from the nullification crisis that, this was cause for war, and there almost was resort to arms in South Carolina in 1832. But the U.S. House passed it 105-64, and, this is very revealing, is that only one Southern congressman voted for it. So it was very imbalanced. And this was part of the Republican platform in 1860. Lincoln campaigned for it. That was his main campaign platform. And it was important in getting him the Pennsylvania delegates, that steel and iron. They thought that was very important. So, Thaddeus Stevens, who after the death of Lincoln was called the boss of the United States, told an audience in 1860 that the two most important issues in the presidential campaign were the extension of slavery to new states and increasing the tariff. But the most important was the tariff. And so when Lincoln was elected, the Senate actually had passed the bill in early 1861, just before his inauguration. Lincoln endorsed all this. And that was practically a call to war, because what it did, it raised those tariffs so high against Southern objections that the cotton states were practically being kicked out of the Union. They had very little choice. And then when Lincoln called for 75,000 troops to invade and put down that, well, he lost Virginia, Tennessee, and Arkansas, and some others. So that's the story of the Morrill Tariff. It was truly a legislative abomination. It was just callous, unmitigated greed passed through legislation which would have exploited the South terribly.
Yeah, so what you're saying is, like what we were talking about earlier, is that it was something that was mounting hostility that had just been like a boiling pot that eventually, because this, you're talking about decades of an attitude from the North toward the South, and I guess the Southerners got kind of fed up with it after a while.
Well, they were fed up with that, and on the slavery issue, all the proclamations of the abolitionists, and they were calling Southern politicians all sorts of names, and they were sending literature into the Southern states calling for a slave rebellion and for even things like cutting the throats of your masters and things like that. So after the John Brown thing in 1854, where John Brown in Kansas, something like, I think he killed, he and a band of his followers, including some of his sons, in Missouri, woke up some families and killed, I think it was about five men with swords. It was something like a Charles Manson kind of thing. John Brown was essentially a madman, but his cause was abolition. And then when he was tried to take over the armory in Virginia in 1857 or 8 it was, he was put down and hung, but the northern press took his side, and even northern pastors and people were claiming that, comparing him to Christ and things like that, and that just outraged the South. Then you put all this, the Morrill Tariff on top of that and other things.
Well, speaking of that insult, I wanted to bring up the issue of religion in the war and, from that perspective, what this other underlying cause was. Can you comment on that?
Well, this goes back probably a long way, but the North was principally New England what was involved here. Were descendants of Puritans, and I am in favor and sympathy with the Puritan theology that they came over with, but they eventually drifted into Unitarianism and all sorts of isms. And a lot of very, very socialistic things, and they drifted away from the Bible as the Word of God. They thought that basically you could come to these moral decisions purely on human reason. But they were into very strange things like transcendentalism. They were mostly universalist, and the South, which was not as religious originally, had been undergoing a religious revival for years, and the South was moving back more toward a biblical-based theology, and where the North was moving away. And when all these things came out with the radical abolitionists, who were really on the Unitarian Universalist Transcendentalist side, were seeing all these things and trying to justify violence against the South, that, of course, didn't go down well. And many Southerners, they began to attack the South and the slavery issue in particular, and the Southern pastors were taking a biblical viewpoint. You can read this in Leviticus that the Bible doesn't actually condemn slavery. It sort of regulates it. And it doesn't say it's a good thing. And nobody believes it's a good thing, but it sort of regulates it. But
well, it was so much. Not just a comment on that, Mike. You know, in the Old Testament, early in the Old Testament, slavery was such an integral part of so many of the societies at that time. You know, just like I said earlier, that it was integral to the economic system in the South. But that's an interesting point you make. Go ahead.
But anyway, there became to be a wide division between the theology of many in the North and those in the South. And that's the reason probably we have the Bible Belt today. It began earlier in the Civil War, but by the time the Civil War came along, and particularly because of the radical abolitionists, it sort of highlighted that issue. And the Confederate battle flag, which keeps getting attacked, it is actually a St. Andrew's cross. And what the Southern people, or the people that decided on that battle flag, were trying to say is that they were a Christian nation, which they, by and large, were. As a matter of fact, it's probably as much as any nation has been a Christian nation. But now, for political purposes, that flag is derided because some people, the Ku Klux Klan, has used it. But the Ku Klux Klan uses the American flag too. So all the flag thing is really has a modern political agenda too.
Well, it does, and I'll tell you a quick little side note on that. In South Carolina, there was such a brouhaha over it being at the top of the state house that so many people rallied to get it moved, and they did. And what they did was they pulled it off the top of the state house and put it on the state grounds, so it was actually more visible. So after all the discussion about bringing it down, they, more people actually saw it than if it had been left at the top of the house. So,
well,
that was an interesting sort of backfire on that.
The I don't know if this is true, but I fear that more will be made out of it during the Democratic primary down there. But it hasn't come up too much in the Republican primary. But the well, there was a religious difference, and another thing that you have to realize is the Republican Party then was really a coalition. It was a big business, big government party. They had really departed from the smaller government, limited government, constitutional government that the Democrats had retained. It's not true today, but back then, Democrat and conservative were practically synonyms. And Republicans stood for this kind of big combination, big government, particularly the railroads. Lincoln was a very successful lawyer for the railroads. And that big government, big business combination, I think they called it something else in Italy during Mussolini, but that's what it was. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, from the Goldwater times, really before that, the Bob Taft times in Ohio, and then Goldwater and Reagan, the Republican Party began to take the old Democratic line of limited government and constitutional government, and backed really sort of the old Democratic line, which they have now abandoned. But I think Ron Paul has pointed this out. The Republican Party, not all the candidates, fortunately, but certainly the Bush administration, has really been a big business, big government party.
Oh, absolutely.
Or administration. And yeah. Not everybody agrees with that. I mean, he's got lots of people who disagree with him in the House, but it's been supported by a lot of senators, unfortunately. But I think part of Ron Paul's message is that, you know, we need to get back to the constitutional limited government of the Constitution of 1789.
Absolutely. Yeah, by the way, I'd love for you to comment about Ron Paul. I know this is a little off subject, but since you brought him up, I'd like to have your take on him in light of some of the truths that emerged in your research in the Civil War.
Well, he said something controversial the other day about Lincoln, but he's right about Lincoln. There's been a myth built around Lincoln, probably of all the political, historical leaders in United States history, there is a bigger gap between the real Lincoln and the mythical Lincoln. And, for instance, here's something that Lincoln said, this really just knocks people down. He said this in 1858 in debate with Stephen Douglas in Ottawa, Illinois. So I will say that I am not in favor of making voters or jurors of Negroes, nor of qualifying them to hold office, nor to intermarry with white people. Anything that argues me into his, that is Douglas's idea of perfect social political equality with a Negro, is but a specious and fantastic arrangement of words by which a man can prove a horse chestnut to be a chestnut horse.
Wow.
There is a Lincoln quote. In his eulogy of Clay in 1852, he goes back to the colonization thing, the deportation, the repatriation thing. He said there is a moral fitness to the idea of returning to Africa her children, and he goes on. And his famous Cooper Union speech in 1860, he advocated again the deportation of blacks to their places to be, and their places to be filled up by free white laborers. Most people don't realize he would have said anything like that, but he was not really the great emancipator. Emancipation sort of resulted. He eventually used emancipation more to woo the British and the French and as really a war measure, because he thought if he emancipated the slaves, that they would rise up and revolt and the Southern Army would not be able to handle it. But the Emancipation Proclamation actually didn't free any slaves in any territory held by Union forces. It only freed them if they were still held by the Confederates, and so to create a rebellion. But they didn't rebel, because most blacks were very loyal to their Southern masters, and the free blacks were very loyal to the South.
Yeah, and I just wanted to interject something right here, because, you know, so often when the TV series a few decades ago came out, Roots, and it depicted some of the atrocities and the horror of the treatment of the slaves. Actually, I worked on a couple of books by an author, Dick Cote. One of them was on Dolly Madison, and the discussion of slavery came up. And what he said was a bit surprising, but made sense to me. He said that for a plantation owner, his slaves were his largest investment. You know, land was cheap, but to buy healthy slaves was not inexpensive. And therefore, they really did, and the head of the household, the wife, was appointed to attend to the physical needs of the slaves, to make sure that they got the medical care and the clothing that they needed. So I'm not making any apologies for any of the treatment that the slaves received. But on the other hand, there were many slaves, even though they were, quote, freed, they did stay. They realized that they were being treated well. I guess it's all relative, being well within the system. And they stayed loyal to their white masters. Well, we're going to take another break. And we'll be back to talk with Mike Scruggs about the Civil War. Please stay tuned to the Republic Broadcasting Network.
The Berkey Light's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkey Light, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkey Light is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkey Light, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
It's not a matter of if, but when. If it happens, you want to be ready to give your loved ones a fighting chance. Do not rely on someone else to come through for you at a time when it could be about life and death. Your best chance is Safe Castle Royal, the premier crisis preparedness buyers club out there. Members get everything at rock-bottom pricing, with at least 20% off everything in our store all the time, and free shipping to the lower 48. Emergency storage food, prefab shelters and safe rooms, and hundreds of other essential products will get you through the toughest of times. Right now, you can join the club for only $10, a one-time lifetime fee that gets you some of the best prices anywhere on preparedness products. Please use the coupon code Club Radio when joining to receive your special membership price. Do it now. Go to safecastleroyal.com. That's safecastleroyal.com. Sign up and use the Club Radio coupon code or call 1-877-673-2394 and be on your way to peace of mind that comes with being prepared.
Since 1988, Herbal Healer Academy has been the global supplier of the finest natural medicines. We specialize in keeping you alive and healthy. We provide outstanding products like ECX, colloidal silver, olive leaf extract, oregano oil, and hundreds of herbals, oils, books, and educational materials. We have homeopathic detox solutions for chemtrails, radiation, MSG, and aspartame poisoning. We also train naturopathic healers via correspondence education. Why wait any longer? Go ahead and do it today. Sign up on the web and receive our new 120-page catalog and a current Herbal Healer newsletter free. Simply log on to herbalhealer.com and check out the online member testimonials and our hundreds of exceptional products. That's herbalhealer.com, your website for safe, effective, natural alternatives and education. That's herbalhealer.com.
We're back talking with Mike Scruggs, author of The Uncivil War. And Mike, before we wrap up, I want to share information with our listeners where they can obtain the book.
Well,
would they go to the Tribune website?
Tribune, the Asheville Tribune, they could call Katrina Morgan. The number is 828-674-9000. 9103, or they can pull up on the internet www.ashevilletribune.com, and there's an advertisement for the book on that page to the right. They can click on that, and they can email Katrina at $6.95 for one copy. There's a discount for larger copies, and we sell a lot of copies in batches of 25 to 100.
Well, it's an excellent compilation of articles, and it certainly is enlightening to me. I wanted to read one of the excerpts. You say here, the standard school texts and teaching on the Civil War in both public and Christian schools perpetuate enormous dishonesty as history. We now have a generation of Americans, including most Southerners, who are shamelessly ignorant of their own history. And, you know, I have to admit that growing up, I was taught pretty much all the mythology, and it has taken a lot of initiative on my own to read and research and find out the truth.
The well, my mother, who died this year at 91, was went through public schools in Arkansas, and she was taught some of the same things you were, and didn't realize that there was a big difference until she talked to her grandmother and asked her, "Do you remember Abraham Lincoln?" And her grandmother, who was a Christian woman, always singing hymns and things, sort of frowns and says, "Yes, I remember Lincoln, and I didn't think much of him." And she asked why, and she said, "Well, when the Yankees came, they took everything we had."
Hmm. Well, Micah, I wanted to ask you about the radical Republicans of that day, and if you can sort of tie them together with Bush and Goldwater and Reagan, et cetera.
Well, the radical Republicans really wanted an American empire, and the Constitution was just in their way. So they were willing to do about anything, and including war on the South, to effectively get rid of the bounds of the Constitution. And when Lincoln was assassinated, he actually had a rather mild plan to reconstruct the South. They saw that as their opportunity to go further. And really what Reconstruction was all about was, a lot of it was just exploitation. But if you really think about it, Lincoln was not elected by a majority, and those southern states that seceded were Democratic. If they came back in the Union as Democratic, the radical Republicans were in trouble with their agenda. So their agenda was to make those states Republican in the sense of big government support of a great American empire.
And, well, Mike, I hate that we're running out of time. This is such a fascinating subject to me and to our listeners. But I want to thank you so much for coming on. And let's talk again. I'd love to have you back on the show another time, and we can just pick up where we dropped off.
Okay. Well, thank you, Nadia. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you. And that's all we have for today. Ladies and gentlemen, continue listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Have a great day.
Since 1988, Herbal Healer